after back-to-back nights with 20 candidates, the first Democratic presidential debates are over.
For a lot of contenders, the debate was a chance to introduce themselves to voters.
But for others, it was a shot at knocking their opponents off their game and convincing voters that they're the best person to take on President Trump in 2020.
Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science at UW-Whitewater, and she joins us now to talk about the debates. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I want to start with the moment that a lot of people are talking about after last night. This is Senator Kamala Harris pushing Vice President Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, on his position on integrating schools by busing students.
To hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country. And it was not only that, but you also worked with them to oppose busing. And, you know, there was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools. And she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
And that's just part of a broader exchange that Senator Harris had with the former vice president. And I think, Susan, that some people expected a little pot shot here and there. Did we expect anything like this back and forth from last night's?
Well, I think in regard to that specific clip that you just played in that issue, and then thinking more broadly about the debate last night, there was more than what we saw on Wednesday in terms of some of that, you know, kind of going very directly at the candidates. And I think the most notable moment was the clip that you just played where Kamala Harris went at Vice President Joe Biden and challenged him on some of the positions he held early on in his career, and then also some of the explanations he's made since then, and then again some of the more recent comments. And I think that in addition to wanting to bring that issue to the fore, there's also an attempt to show a generational divide, I would say, amongst the different candidates across the stage both nights.
Yeah, and we had one candidate, you know, kind of making reference to that, saying, hey, Joe Biden said it was time to pass the torch 30 years ago, and Biden saying, hey, I'm still holding the torch. And on this particular exchange, you know, we could look at it as it was an isolated thing between the former vice president and Senator Kamala Harris. But could we also look at it as, hey, here are the two very distinct portions of the Democratic Party right now, and they're kind of fighting to really capture the soul of the party at this point?
Well, I think that across the two dozen or so candidates who are running and the 20 who were on the stage, there's a broad range of positions, all within the Democratic policy, obviously, but ranging from, you know, more moderate to more liberal. And so we're just seeing that play out. I think that, again, we're also seeing what kinds of issues each candidate wants to focus their campaign on and make the centerpiece of their campaign moving forward.
I want to take a listen to a little bit more of that exchange. And here's the former vice president's response.
Everything I've done in my career, I ran because of civil rights. I continue to think we have to make fundamental changes in civil rights. And those civil rights, by the way, include not just only African-Americans, but the LGBT community.
But Vice President Biden, do you agree today that you were wrong to oppose busing in America then?
No,
do you agree?
I did not oppose busing in America. What I opposed is busing ordered by the Department of Education. That's what I oppose.
So former Vice President Joe Biden really came into these debates widely seen as the front runner in this race. And when you're the front runner in the debates, you don't want to say anything that's going to get you in trouble. But you also know that people may come after you. If you're the former vice president, how do you proceed after last night?
Well, I mean, I think that what his staff and he have to do is be more prepared to answer those types of questions moving forward in the next debate. But even before that, I mean, for example, today Vice President Biden is speaking at an event for Operation Push with Jesse Jackson, and he addressed the issue, speaking broadly about his support for civil rights and his support for and the support from the African-American community throughout his long career. So I think that the immediate attempt to bounce back is to refute some of the criticisms he's getting as a result of some of those comments and try to shift the narrative a bit so that we're not talking about it as much as I guess we're talking about it.
Were there other points in the debate where Biden perhaps was a little bit better? Were there high points for him that perhaps are now overshadowed by this exchange with Senator Harris?
I think that's hard to say. I didn't necessarily see any particular high points. One of the high points in an exchange with Senator Harris that I thought was a good comeback for Senator Biden was when he made the comment that when he went into practicing law, he chose to be a public defender and she chose to be a prosecutor. And I think he was trying to send a message there. I think that I didn't find him to be particularly well prepared to answer a lot of the questions. So I think that maybe when he was defending the work that he and President Obama had done, I think that might have been some of his stronger points.
We're talking right now with Susan Johnson. She is an associate professor of political science at UW-Whitewater. And we are talking about the two Democratic debates that took place this week. And Susan, we've talked so far about the debate that happened last night. We also need to remember that there was one that happened the previous night. And that one featured Elizabeth Warren, who, you know, some think she had a little bit of a luck of the draw here. You know, she was in a debate without the other two perceived front runners, Senator Bernie Sanders and former Vice President Joe Biden. And what did you make of Elizabeth Warren's performance on Wednesday nights?
You know, I think she went in with some high expectations because she was on the stage with the candidates that were perceived to be, many of them, second-tier candidates. And I thought she did quite well. I thought she held her own. I thought that she was able to clearly articulate, as she's been able to do throughout the campaign, clearly articulate well-defined policy positions in a number of different areas. So I think that the only place she could have gone was, you know, I mean, to show poorly, and she obviously didn't do that.
The other front runner that we haven't talked about so much yet is Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie caused quite a stir when he jumped into the race in 2016 in his push to push the party further to the left. He's now one of several candidates this year who's trying to do that same thing. So looking at his debate performance last night, did he do enough to really convince the progressive voters in the Democratic Party that he's still the one to carry the torch on this?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Chris. One of the analyses of the debate that I read, Winners and Losers, it said that a winner was Bernie Sanders' ideas, but a loser was Bernie Sanders.
Mm.
And, you know, I think what was meant by that is that in 2016, Bernie Sanders, he owned the left. And when he was running against Clinton, she was seen as a pragmatic, more moderate Democratic candidate. And he was able to mobilize the left of the Democratic Party, and he was the only one speaking about a lot of the issues, Medicare for All, for example. There are other things that are seen to be much more on the left of the Democratic Party. And what's happened is that a lot of people since then have adopted his ideas, and they're not necessarily as fresh, or I would argue maybe even necessarily as controversial as they were 4 years ago. And so now he's not the only person out there advocating for some of these things. And as a result, I don't know that he's going to be the most supported person carrying that message moving forward.
As we said, there were 20 candidates who took the stage over the last two nights. There were a couple of candidates who didn't make it. And we've talked a lot about the people that we do know. Let's talk about some of the ones who America may have been introduced to last night and the night before. Who do you think out of the lesser-known candidates really took advantage of that position on the debate stage?
I think I would go back to the first debate, and I would say, for example, Julian Castro, who had been in President Obama's cabinet and was able to, again, well articulate positions, particularly on immigration, but on other things as well, that I think people were wondering, who is this? And, you know, doing searches to try to figure out more about him. I think Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, is someone who has been trying to break into that next tier, and I think that he did well on that first night. And I think last night, I don't know where Mayor Pete Buttigieg, ranks in terms of top tier or not, but I think he held his own last night. I think that for a lot of people who were watching, myself included, at the beginning, I was trying to make sense of, I didn't recognize everyone. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To be honest. And I was trying to, you know, make sure I knew who all was up there. And I think that was the case for a lot of people who were watching.
Before we move on and talk about a couple of specific issues, I want to ask you this question, Susan. We did a debate preview segment, and I asked this question to the guest as well, and I'm interested with these debates that happened over the last two nights, who the audience was for them. Is the audience undecided voters, Democrats, or are they the people with money out there who might be wondering where they're going to get the best bang for their buck?
You mean who are the candidates speaking to?
Yeah, who are they speaking to? Who are they really trying to reach during these debates?
Well, I think that they're trying to range a multitude of people. I think that absolutely they're trying to reach voters because it's really important that they are able to register higher in the polls as the threshold goes up for access to these debates. At the same time, if those same people are sending them even a little bit of money, or if high-priced donors are willing to give them money, I think that that's key. And I think another group that they're playing to is the media. And because we're here talking about winners and losers, every network did a winners and losers analysis. And that is something that, you know, people pay attention to, and voters pay attention to that as well. So I think that there's a bit with, and I think that that plays out particularly with the different kinds of buzz lines or taglines that candidates try to get out there to make sure that as we talk about it, as newscasts talk about it, as Twitter talks about things, that some of those sound bites get attention and will help, hopefully for them, raise their profile.
I'm wondering, too, you know, we've talked about who had good debate performances, and, you know, some media, like you've said, have gone to the extra step to saying these are the winners and losers. Do we have to be a little bit careful as media members in the language that we use so as we're not making up minds for voters?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's very important, and I think that that's just part and parcel. It's hard to do analysis without talking about strengths and weaknesses, mm-hmm. right? And so I don't think necessarily people are trying to do a disservice to one or the other. Clearly, some did better than others, but it's just one debate, and it's very early, and most people had just a few minutes to speak on that stage. So I would caution from making too many assumptions or judgments just based on one debate.
We're talking right now with Susan Johnson of UW-Whitewater about the first Democratic debate that wrapped up after its second night yesterday.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Did you tune in for the debates? Who stood out to you? Did your opinion change about any of the candidates? And what did you think about the different positions you heard from them on issues like immigration or health care? If you didn't watch, call in and tell us why at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org.
We'll continue this conversation after a short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Chris Molina.
And I'm Jay Carlisle-Larson. Right now, we continue our conversation about the last two nights of Democratic debates with Susan Johnson. She's Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you wish you saw more of from the candidates over both nights? Do you feel like they missed any issues that are important to you? If you think you'll be voting in the first Democratic primary, which candidates did you like the most? And if you think you'll be voting on the Republican side of the ticket, what do you think of what you heard? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at CentralTimeWPR. We'll go to the phones now, and Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Go ahead.
I watched both debates, and it's pretty obvious that it just seems like they're running more for Santa Claus than they are running for president. And the TDS, the Trump Derangement Syndrome, is still at an all-time high. How do they expect to get, you know, people like me who don't necessarily like Trump, but, you know, I don't want to go down a socialist path, and I want to deal with people that are normal.
Steve, thank you so much for that call. And that was something that came up in the debate last night, Susan, especially in terms of Bernie Sanders, you know, whether or not the country might be ready for a candidate who's wearing that label socialist. If we are going forward with a candidate like this, is that something that there's some thinking that might play right into the Republicans' hands and might be an advantage to President Trump?
Well, I think a lot of Democrats who are not Bernie Sanders and who don't identify as Democratic Socialists are, eager to make that claim. I think Steve brings up a good point. What happens during the nomination phase, and the same thing would have happened in 2016 with the Republicans, when there was a lot of candidates running, they're trying to distinguish themselves from each other. And last night and the night before, there was a lot of crosstalk, a lot of cutting people off, a lot of pointed comments. And I think that that was because different people were just trying to get the attention of the moderators, of the audience, and, you know, everyone who was watching. And so they're not the most staid events, I would argue. And I think that what we need to do is, you know, wait as these things, as the candidate numbers of candidates start to get smaller. And I'm hoping that that will lead to more civilized and more detailed discussions of the policy nuances.
Steve, thank you so much for the call. We'll go next to Terry in Genoa. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm still kind of catching up on the debates. I've got a little one at home, so, you know, finding the time. But I'm almost to the end of the first debate, and I was quite surprised. Julian Castro, I didn't know much about him, and he really stood out. And Beto O'Rourke stood out to me as well. I found him to be very articulate and passionate, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the next debate brings.
Terry, thank you so much for that call. So Terry is a perfect example, Susan, of the kind of people that candidates like Julian Castro are trying to reach because, you know, by and large, I would think that Democrats haven't quite made up their minds yet because they don't necessarily know who these people are.
Of course. And some of the candidates that are polling very high are polling that way. A lot of it is name recognition. And so what we should be seeing happening now, I'll be curious when some of the polls come out after the debate to see who's moved up or down. And someone like Julian Castro, I mean, I agree with Terry that I think he stood out. I would expect to see his poll numbers increase. I would expect his number of donors to increase as well. And so he might be someone that might get a little bit more traction. But again, it's so early in the process that we're still in the sort of sifting and winnowing stage. And I want to see more moving forward.
Terry, thank you so much for that call. We are talking with Susan Johnson. She's an associate professor of political science at UW-Whitewater, and we are talking about the Democratic debates that happened this week. And one of the big issues in last night's debate, and the one on Wednesday as well, was health care. Let's take a listen to this clip of NBC's Lester Holt asking the candidates about this.
Many people watching at home have health insurance coverage through their employer. Who here would abolish their private health insurance in favor of a government-run plan? Just a show of hands to start off with.
And so they did this on both nights, and only four candidates raised their hands. But it looks like healthcare, just judging by the amount of time that it got in both of these debates, is going to be shaping up to be one of the big issues of this election. How important is this going to be for Democrats as they campaign going forward?
Well, I think this is a key issue. In 2018, it was one of the issues that resonated with voters more than most others. And I expect that we're going to have Democratic candidates talking a lot about health care. I mean, health care costs continue to go up. There's issues with access to health care, prescription drug costs. I mean, all sorts of things across the board that can be discussed when it comes to health care. And this is an area where we saw a lot of difference over the two nights in regard to people's positions. And I expect that, again, as we get deeper into this nomination process, we're going to see more of those nuances come out.
One other thing I want to talk about before we have to wrap up is the role of women up there on stage. And I want to go back to Wednesday when Washington Governor Jay Inslee made a comment about being the only candidate to have passed a law protecting a woman's right to reproductive health and health insurance. And that got a response from Senator Amy Klobuchar. Let's take a listen.
I just want to say there's three women up here that have fought pretty hard for a woman's right to choose. I'll start with that.
And that was probably one of the lines that got the biggest applause from the audience during the two nights. But, Susan, it's certainly worth noticing that we saw a record number of women over the last couple of nights. What's the significance of that?
Well, I think that it's very important. It was women. It was minority candidates. And it it showed, you know, diversity that we have not seen. And I think that shows that the Democratic Party is interested in promoting different people, again, different women and minority candidates. And there's a lot of interest in having a diverse field.
We got an email from Johan who emails, can we all agree, stop name calling, stop bullying, just tell me what your plans are and how you plan on doing it. And that kind of echoes something that Senator Kamala Harris said when she said, let's not have a food fight. Let's talk about how we're going to put food on people's tables. So, Susan, are we going to see a civil campaign going forward? Are we going to get what Johan is talking about here? No name calling, no bullying?
I hope so. I can't make any promises. I think that last night, what we saw with a lot of the crosstalk and cutting people off and interruptions, I think that was because people were trying to get their voice heard. I found it a bit disconcerting, and I was wishing that they would have shut the mics down at some point, because maybe that would have kept more civility, because I didn't know that that was the best representation of the Democratic Party.
I think they tried the mics off trick on night one, and it didn't go so well.
Yeah.
Well, there's my political humor for the day, and we'll leave it there. Susan, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That was Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. She was with us today to recap what we saw over the last two nights of the Democratic debates.